I don't know if
Is it good?
is it good? Yes. Okay.
All right, I'll turn this off.
All right, and
It's
I
all
put this
yours.
up here. Okay, good. It's a lot of stuff to navigate.
Lower it.
Yeah, a little bit, please. Oh.
It is off, Kathleen.
Okay, good.
She's my manager.
Okay, well, we all need a manager.
Is that good?
That's good. That's perfect. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, thanks. So, everybody, I'm Leslie. I'm an alcoholic. And I have to say, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy we're all here. And in full disclosure, I have to say that I've not been to an Al-Anon meeting. I know about Al-Anon, but I've not been to a meeting. And so my initial thinking is that this is different and it's a little uncomfortable. But if I've learned anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's okay to be uncomfortable. And I know today that that's not something I need to take a drink over, because in the past, believe me, if there was anything uncomfortable or different or change and I didn't like it, that drink was coming and couldn't get here soon enough. I'll save this for later. So let me see what time it is. Okay. All right. So as I say, I've never been to Al-Anon meeting before, and I don't know, Rick, who you are or where you are, but I am looking forward to hearing what you have to offer. This is like the yin and the yang thing, I guess, you know. We're the tornadoes, and then you guys do your thing. And anyway, so I'm always amazed. You know, when I go to an AA meeting, I know, like, okay, I know pretty much everyone, and you know the newcomers because you haven't seen them. And now I don't know, like, should, like, you go to a wedding and the Al-Anon people sit over here and the AA people sit over here. So I don't know a lot of you, but I'm happy that I do have a couple of folks that have come out. And I'm always amazed when I go to any AA meetings that I don't normally go to that. My earring. Should I take them off? Yes. All right. I'm willing to do that. And I'm always amazed when I go to an AA meeting that I don't normally go to, that I usually see, you know, one or two folks that I know from somewhere, because we are everywhere and we get around. And today that's a good thing. In the past, you know, people in my life didn't think that was such a good thing. So anyway, you know, I always like to start by saying that I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And if nothing else you hear, I hope things that I say demonstrate in some kind of way how much I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful for the thing, for the transformation that it's brought to my life and for the new life that I have today. I can't imagine what things would be like today. And I'm just grateful for the gifts that Alcoholics Anonymous has brought to me. And this time of year, you know, I think about it often, but especially this time of year, I'm thinking about relationships and the rebuilding of relationships, because that's one of the gifts and the bonuses that can happen for us as we get sober and move into recovery. I have a grandson who is 11, and about I mean, I don't go around shouting that I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous or those kinds of things, but he's very observant. And about a year ago, we were outside and he started asking me about why I don't drink and why do you go to meetings and who do you hang out with there. And so I didn't want to just blow him off, but I wasn't, you know, kind of caught me off guard. And I wasn't exactly sure what to say. So I shared with him in a general way that, you know, it's a group of folks and we get together and we don't drink and we talk about why we don't drink and we talk about things that happen when we do drink. And he's not ever seen me drink. So anyway, I was with him just the other day and he said, they call me Juju. I don't know why or where that came from, but I love it. He said, so Juju, you guys are coming over for Christmas, right? And I said, yeah, we're going to be there on Christmas Eve and we're going to spend the night and then we'll be here on Christmas Day. And he said, Well, you know how you sometimes you go off and go to those meetings. He said, "So does that mean that on Christmas you have to go to one of those anti-alcohol meetings?" And I said, "Well, Nathan, you're family and very important." I said, "But the people that I see on a regular basis when I go to these meetings are also my extended family, and they mean a very lot to me also." I said, "But I can promise you that I will take the day off on Christmas and I will not go to a meeting." And he said, "Okay, that sounds good." And he smiled and we moved on. And so anyway, one time, just as an aside, he's a big reader. I know this isn't about him, but I love him. And he, I have a lot of AA literature and different things. And I guess I had some service manuals in the back seat. So I was driving, and all of a sudden, he starts reading from the service manual. And I thought to myself, first of all, I said, "What is that?" And then I said, "That kind of sounds familiar." And I kind of glanced over, and he was reading from the service manual. I said, "That's advanced, Nathan. We'll have to wait until you get into that later." So anyway, yeah, that was that. So I'd love to share that story about it. Anyway, I come from a family where there was a lot of drinking that took place, and it didn't seem unusual or excessive. Until it did. And that's kind of the way that goes. I didn't really think too much about it. What I did think at the time was, I was raised by a single mother and we spent a lot of time visiting my aunt and uncle. And I would just think, wow, those guys are really having a good time. They would mix their highballs, as they called them, and they had this big rumpus room, and oh, they'd be playing pool, they'd be dancing, or sometimes they'd be playing cards, and it just looked like a lot of fun. And so that's all I thought about it. But a little bit over time, I started seeing what was going on and thinking maybe a little bit differently about it. And I didn't know what alcoholism was. When I think about people who drank or an alcoholic, and I don't know how. I know this thought is shared by a few people. I've heard it, is that it's that guy that's under the freeway drinking, wine out of a bottle. Now, I didn't get myself under the freeway, but I certainly advanced to drinking my wine and whatever it was, my drink of choice. I certainly drank that straight from the bottle. So anyway, but back then I didn't understand what that was all about. And then a little bit over time, as time would go by, I'd notice some things happening in the family. And I share this with you not because this is what made me an alcoholic, but these are just experiences that I had and what when I was around this sort of thing. I started noticing a couple of things, like my aunt was a nurse and they worked the afternoon shift. And every now and again, it wouldn't be unusual for one of her coworkers, a friend of the family, would come over and they'd have a beer before they went off to the hospital for their shift. Something intuitively told me, I don't think that's really what's supposed to happen when you drink before you go off to work. And then we'd spend a lot of time, as I say, at my aunt's house, and I began to notice that my mother would drink all day long, and then when it was time for us to leave at the end of the weekend, we'd all pile in the car and she'd drive us an hour home. And I remember feeling very uncomfortable after a time, and just as soon as we get in the car, I would get in the back seat and I would fall asleep, and I would hope that when we woke up, we would be pulling into home and into the driveway. And those are things that I started noticing over time. And then even in once we were home, I noticed that my mother would, be making, and I relate to this, be making frequent trips to the garage for no apparent reason. Now, I can relate to that at the end of my drinking. I can also relate to driving while I was drunk, even with my daughter in the car. The thing that I didn't do was take a drink before I went to work. And I know that that was just one of those things that we say is a yet for me. Over time, there, you know, I had no control, and over time, I very likely would have been that person taking the drink before I went to work. Now, I will also say that even though I claim I didn't drink before I went to work, I would be up late drinking and then get up for my early shift. And if someone were to have tested my blood alcohol when I got to work, I can tell you that there would have been alcohol in my system. So, you know, rationalization. And anyway, and but I do know that the book says that our drinking gets worse, never better. I'm a scholar on that one. I didn't understand that at the time with my family or with my own drinking, as I'll get into. But anyway, with all of that being said, my road to recovery was very long. I did not want to be my mother. I did not want to be an alcoholic. As I say, I didn't even exactly know what that was. My mother eventually got sober, but she did not do it through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can tell you that for a lot of the time when things were uncomfortable and strange at home, I wore blinders a lot of time then, you know, and I can tell you that today, sometimes in my own life, even here today, that I put on blinders and just kind of go on like, you know, everything's okay. And I don't pay attention to all the details. And anyway, there was no way that I thought that I had a drinking problem. There was no way that I thought that my life was unmanageable. And however, my family and my friends saw it quite differently. And I have to have a little notes here because my mind strays and I get in those one mental blank spot and I don't remember what I'm saying. So anyway, after a long time of my family really, and this went on, you know, kind of shortening it up a little bit, but after a long time of my family being on my case about my drinking and having all kinds of suggestions as to what I should do about it. You should go to AA. They probably knew more about it than I did at the time. I just was resistant to that whole thing. And I said that maybe I might drink heavily. Maybe I might overindulge on occasion. And I will do a little something just to settle you down. I'll go to therapy because I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of admitting certainly to myself and to you that I'm an alcoholic, and Alcoholics Anonymous seems just a little bit extreme. So I wasn't all in for that. And, you know, I didn't want to be my mother, but on the other hand, I thought there was other ways that I could, I wasn't her and I could deal with these kind of things. And anyway, still in denial, you know, I'm thinking, and I know that people in the rooms of AA have heard, and everyone, you know, how could I possibly be an alcoholic? Now, I am college educated. I have a job. I'm married. I have the family. I even mow the lawn and do the laundry sometimes. So, you know, I pay the bills. So what's the problem? You know, as I talked about rationalizing earlier, when I was in the middle of whatever it was that was going on, I always thought that, you know, it was somebody else's fault. I was clearly the victim. And so anyway, I tried this therapy thing, and guess what? It didn't work, because, you know, in that way you get, and in a lot of things, you know, we get what we give. And I wasn't honest with my therapist, and it doesn't work with lies. It wouldn't be unusual if I'd been up drinking the night before. I usually have them on my sessions on my day off. And so I would make them very early in the morning, because if it was a day off, because by now I'm drinking on my day off, and I'm drinking, I don't wait till 5 o'clock cocktail hour, let me just say. And so I would make this early morning appointment, and sometimes I would oversleep. And so he would allow me to have sessions on the phone. So I would have a glass of wine or a cocktail in one hand and the phone in my other hand. And you can see that that's not a good mix, and that it didn't work. And so anyway, I continued to drink. And, you know, little by little, as I said, my drinking got worse and worse. You know, I don't, I didn't mention that I don't remember the first time that I got actually drunk and crazy, but I do remember the first time that I drank. And when I was growing up, I was wound up really tight. I was fearful. I was afraid of you and what you were saying about me, or what I was sure that you were saying about me. And I struggled with life as it was being dealt to me. And as I said, I felt like I was a victim. Now, I guess if I had known back when I was that young that alcohol could have been a solution, I probably would have started drinking a lot sooner than I actually did. Anyway, I would continue to drink, and alcohol became the most important thing that I had going on in my life. If I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking. Eventually, I thought that I was ready. But actually before that, you know, when I talk about consequences, you know, they can come in all shapes and forms. You know, sometimes we have financial consequences, and you know, there's consequences with families, and in my drinking, I was sure that I wasn't hurting anybody but myself. What happened though, by the time I came into the rooms, I was so emotionally spent that it did, you know, I'm just kind of walking along. I felt empty. I felt like a shell. And some of the things that happened before that, you know, because I'm going to ride this thing to the end. And I started having blackouts, which in the beginning, I didn't know that blackouts weren't something that all people who drank had. And I thought maybe sometimes you drink a little bit much, and so, you know, you don't remember. But at the end of my drinking, I definitely had blackouts, which made waking up in the morning a little bit uncomfortable. Because often I did not remember what I had said or done. And I remember one time I took a trip to San Francisco, but I didn't remember why I went, or even, I drove my car. I know that because, but I didn't know why I was there. I found myself parking at the corner of Van Ness and some street, and I'm thinking, I'm starting to get a little nervous as to what am I doing here. I had to call my husband. That was a little uncomfortable, and he said, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'm at the corner of Van Ness and whatever the street was." And the questions, why, I don't know. Towards the end of my drinking was a pretty regular thing, not going to the city, but blackouts and not knowing what happened. There was an occasion when my husband had to call 911 because I had alcohol poisoning. And when I kept telling him I hadn't been drinking, and I was sitting on the bed, and I just fell off the end of the bed, and I wasn't breathing very well. And so he called 911 and I went to the hospital. But again, you know, even with all of these things, I felt like I was like, you know, that toy, you blow it up, kids played with it. I don't know what it's called. It's got sand on the bottom of it, and you knock it down and it bounces back up, and you knock it down and it bounces back up. Or I thought I was a cat with nine lives. And that's how I looked at these things as they were happening. And then, you know, the whole idea of, I call them my personal adventures, where I would be doing things with people in places that I shouldn't be. And, you know, that was hurtful to a lot of people. That was, and getting caught doing those things. Again, you know, I thought I was being so sneaky in that I was then hiding my alcohol. And I remember once because I blacked out, I would get the large bottles of alcohol. I called those my mothership, and I would pour them into water bottles, and I would, you know, have those around. Sometimes I'd drink them in Safeway when I was shopping or wherever I happened to be. And then I would hide the big bottle of alcohol in the garage. But I woke up one morning, and obviously my husband was on to me, and there were six bottles of vodka lined up on the counter. And I walked into that, and I thought, I don't think I'm going to be able to lie my way out of this situation. And then, you know, in the middle of the night while my husband was sleeping, I would make my way down to the liquor cabinet. And at one time, I thought he was sleeping. He woke up and he said, where are you going? And I said, I'm going downstairs to get a drink of water. Well, we have a bathroom upstairs and there's water in the bathroom. And next thing I know, I thought I was being so sneaky. I went down the stairs and next thing I know, I'm taking a big pull off a bottle of vodka and he's behind me. And he says, what are you doing? And for the first time I said to him, and I don't know where this came from or why I said this. I said, I have absolutely no idea, but I just know I have to. And that was kind of the beginning. So at that point I thought, you know, okay, maybe I'm ready to do something a little more serious than therapy. So I feel like my first spiritual experience happened when I was home alone and I said to myself, I was sort of admitting, you might have an alcohol problem and you might need some help. And it doesn't look like you're going to be able to do this on your own. It's not, whatever you're doing is not working. And so I made a call to a recovery center and made arrangements to show up there the next day. And so I was all prepped. And actually, I was feeling good about that in some ways. I felt like, wow, maybe something can change. And so I wanted to be sure. Now I want to be sure that they're going to keep me. So on the way to this recovery place, I stopped at the liquor store down the street from my home and I bought a bottle of, you know, not the big bottle, but the smaller one of vodka. Now I didn't drink it on the way. I didn't drink and drive that day, but I went to the parking lot of this facility and I pulled over way in the back in the corner and I drank the whole thing because I wanted to be sure that they were going to keep me. At that point, now I'd made that decision and I didn't want there to be any chance that they were going to send me out. Well, they kept me all right. And so I stayed there and went through that. And I managed to stay sober for about 10 months, but I didn't stay. Now, during that time, you know, we hear a lot that people go out for all variety of reasons, but one of them being, you know, we stop working the program or we stop going to meetings. In my case, at that time, I did not stop going to meetings. I was attending meetings regularly. I had a sponsor. I didn't call her about this, but I had a sponsor and I had service commitments and I was even sponsoring other women. I guess I was sort of doing a dress rehearsal. I wasn't 100%. I was telling myself that I was 100% willing, but apparently I was not. So this would happen. I had several visits, as I like to call them, to Alcoholics Anonymous. My first attempt to get sober then was in 2007. And my sobriety date is August 8th of 2010. And I was helped right along with that when I got my DUI. Now, that's something that I never thought, it wasn't on my bucket list, that's for sure. And I never thought that that was something that would happen to me. I had been driving drunk many times and not been caught. But I'll have to tell you that that was really, the DUI was really a turning point for me. And when it was happening, you know, I've been driving home from a party and I wasn't even in a blackout when that was happening. Although my vision of what happened that night is a little bit different than the police officer's version, which I still have. And periodically I do pick up and read because it's a good reminder to me of what happened. And I don't ever want to forget that. And I referred to that even then, that it was one of the best things that's ever happened to me. God had had a 2x4 trying to use it for a very long time. And I think for me, fortunately, that was the final blow. no guarantees, you know, with all the turbulence and things that happen in life, and what I do with that, that, you know, my daughter had asked me at one point, can you promise me that you'll never drink again? And I said, I can't promise you that. I hope that that is the case and that I stay sober. After I finally came in to Alcoholics Anonymous and became a member and stopped looking from the outside in, and with that DUI, I got very serious. I couldn't tell if you were trying to give me a message or something back there. You're good. I got very serious. And I'd had a sponsor before, as I said, and I had taken the steps. It felt different this time. I was ready to give the whole deal up. I was ready to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to my sponsor. I can remember how it felt the day after I got out of Santa Rita, going to my sponsor's house and sharing everything. And a little side note on that, I had had a sponsor, and we had done the steps and we were working together. And just after a bit of time, it just felt like I needed to move on. Now, you know, initially I want to blame everything on the sponsor as to why this relationship wasn't working, but that wasn't the case at all. You know, I wasn't keeping up my end of the bargain either. I wasn't calling her regularly and I wasn't sharing the whole truth with her. So the night before I got this DUI, I had met with a woman and told her, someone that I had known for a while, and told her that I was looking for a new sponsor. And she said, who'd you have in mind? And I said, you. And so we talked back and forth. And she asked me some questions, and she said, okay, we can do this. And so I left that meeting and I told her, I felt like the weight of the world had been lifted off my shoulders, because the thought of changing sponsors was daunting to me. And I thought, you know, I thought you get a sponsor and you keep them for the rest of your life. But anyway, I tell her, I think the weight of the world has been lifted from my shoulders. And the next time she heard from me was that night in Santa Rita. And I said, well, maybe a little bit of progress. I called you before I called my husband to let him know where I was, if that's progress. So anyway, I still have that sponsor today, and we have been working together for all of these 13 years. But the morning I went over there, I remember sitting on the edge of her couch and just letting it all out. It felt so good. It was almost like letting the air out of a balloon. It's like I did not want to hold on to anything. And I remember there was one thing I was going to bring up and share with her. She said, you don't really have to tell me about all the details and about all that. I said, oh, yes, I do, because from this point forward, you're going to know everything about me, whether you want to know it or not. And we have a great relationship, and I take my relationship with that sponsor very seriously. A few more minutes left, so... So today, you know, I have 13 years of sobriety, but it's hard to believe that. I think 13 years, wow, that's a lot. But then on the other hand, I think 13 years, that's nothing. You know, I really have so much more to learn and experience, and I'm hungry to learn all the things about Alcoholics Anonymous and continue to learn things about myself, because, you know, things come up. And, my sobriety today, I know, comes first. It has to come first. And talking about going to meetings on holidays and things, I've been at holiday gatherings, birthday gatherings, and, you know, I stay for the festivities, and then I say, okay, I got to go because it's time for the meeting. And I go to the meeting and I go back, and they understand that today, and they're grateful. And usually they say, you know, although we would wish you would stay, we understand that you need to go to your meeting, that you want to go to your meeting. And we just want you to do whatever it is that you need to do to keep you sober and keep yourself in the way behavior and the things that you're doing today. I walk this path with the sponsor, as I said, and with all of you. I can't do this alone. And it's very I love going to meetings. You know, I mean, I have lots of stories without time to tell them all, but I love going to meetings. You know, sometimes people say, you know, we all know how to get drunk and do all that kind of thing, so don't worry about sharing too much on the drunkalogue. But I actually like hearing sometimes the things that people do when they've been drinking, and then you see they're not those people today. We're not those people today. I'm not that person today. And so I, you know, it's possible. It's possible, the before and after. And I have a higher power in my life today, and I have constant contact. I try to make time in the morning to have a chat with my higher power and do a little meditation. And today was a good example. You know, there's a lot of, I don't know if you've noticed it, but out on the roads these days, there seems to be a lot of crazy folks. And when I was coming here tonight, I was waiting at the light to turn, and there was another car in front of me. And all of a sudden this car out of nowhere comes at a high rate of speed and just pulls in front of the first car. And I thought he was going to go through the red light, but he just stopped. But, you know, thankfully, I did my prayer. I did my meditation today, so I could say, okay, well, I wish the best for you. I wish you well, and, you know, move on. And one of the other things I read the other day was, I can judge people, even, you know, 13 years of sobriety, not immune to that. And the reading I read said, when you judge other people, it's just really your superiority showing itself. You know, I would have never have thought that, but that's true. And so I try to keep an eye on that. And it, you know, judging someone doesn't change them. It just makes me irritable. And that's not the way that's supposed to be. So anyway, service fuels me. I love service. There's nothing like working with alcoholics for the other alcoholics. And you can be of service outside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous as well. And I try to do that to the best of my ability most of the time. And, you know, I just, as I say, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the journey that I've been on. And even through all of the relapses that I had along the way, I read something, and I think it was, might even have been out of a Daily Reflections, I'm not sure, but it said that relapses can be stepping stones to, you know, I'm paraphrasing, move us forward to get us where we need to be. And I'm a firm believer, and I know for myself that I needed to experience everything that I experienced along the way to get me here to these rooms today. So that's what I have. I want to thank you all for listening, and thank you for enhancing my recovery.